Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Peter Paul Brazola, and it's a rainy day. A hard rain is going to fall, and it's falling even harder on these corrupt politicians, these incompetents. This is an interesting day in history, May 27th. Unfortunately, I got caught up with some things, but anyway, there's two major naval battles that took place on this date, and they affected world history in most unusual ways. 1905, the Japanese Navy defeated, they were waiting for the Russian Baltic Fleet, which sailed halfway around the world, one of the great feats of circumnavigation, and that was to challenge the Japanese in the Russian-Japanese War of 1905. And Admiral Radzivinsky, everybody hated the Russians, and he wouldn't give them coal. But somehow they managed to come out of the Baltic Sea all the way around the world to meet the Japanese fleet, which was waiting in the Tsushima Straits. And what everybody thought that we're pulling for the Japanese, the plucky little Japs, as Teddy Roosevelt referred to them. And they expected the Russians to defeat them, but the Russians, this is typical military incompetence. They were using black powder on their to shoot their shells at the Japanese fleet. They only sunk about three ships, whereas the Japanese were building the modern navy. The British built their navy for them, our British ships, and they were well trained. Admiral Togo was one of the great heroes of the Japanese navy. He ranks with Admiral Yamamoto. Politics aside, the emperor's side. And, of course, Teddy Roosevelt got the first of the Nobel Prizes awarded to American presidents. The last one, well, I won't comment on that one. And it certainly wasn't earned. It was political. But that happened. And then in 1940, the biggest battleship the Germans ever built, called the Bismarck, and on its maiden voyage, in effect, coming out of the Denmark Strait, it sank the pride of the British Navy. And here's another military incompetence. The biggest ship in the British Navy, but it was built for World War I specs, and they never put armor over the magazine where all the shells were kept. And with the German remarkable shooting, they hit the magazine. The shells went right through and blew up the hood, broke in two, and only three sailors survived out of a crew of, I think, about 3,000. Of course, the Bismarck was to meet its fate, and again, technology played a role. What had happened was the hood was accompanied by the Britain's most modern battleship, the Prince of Wales, and one of the shells from the Prince of Wales was on its maiden voyage also. The workmen hadn't even been taken off the ship. Hit the stern, the rudder of the Bismarck, and they were also leaking oil, or not hit the rudder, but they were leaking oil. Instead of refueling, Admiral Lutyens decided to sail into the Atlantic and raid the convoys. And then he made this mistake. It was his birthday, and he the British lost them in the fog, and he sent off this long radio message, and the British tracked it and located him. And then they didn't have modern Spitfires on their aircraft carriers. They had what they called string bats, World War I planes. And German guns were geared to the speed of the modern planes of that day, but not to the string bats. And the string bat torpedo hit the rudder of the Bismarck, and the Bismarck couldn't free the rudder, and they were going in circles. And the British sent out their entire home fleet to sink that ship. And the unfortunate part was the sailors are supposed to save other sailors after a battle. what happened was one of the destroyers started to pick up the German survivors, and there was a claim that there were submarines in the area, and they left over 1,000 German sailors to die in the frigid waters of the North Atlantic. A great shame on the British. And also at Dunkirk, that same year, 1940, the British had to leave all their equipment behind, but they were able to muster every vessel that could float to evacuate their army to fight another day. And this may be a lesson for people like the Mexican president and anybody else who comes to address Congress. This is something that's not looked at. Who determines who is going to address a joint session of the U.S. Congress? But anyway, Calderon came up here, and instead of being a guest and following Churchill, what Churchill did was he came before the a joint session of Congress, and one of the last things he said and was practically pleading, saying, give us the weapons and we'll get the job done. Of course, they needed our help, but at least he asked. He didn't come here and chastise us and insult us. It's just a shame what he did. And if our president, if we had a decent president that went to Mexico and addressed their Congress, do you think we'd get away with it? We wouldn't hear about it. So, very bad manners. And of course, the problem how they treat their illegals, migrants coming through their southern border. So, it's really a shameful period in our history. Also today, a lot of interesting birthdays. Let's see, where are we? Getting back to World War One. This is a death. The guy who saved Paris was a French general, an old guy named Gallieni. And what he did was he commandeered all the taxi cabs of Paris and sent them to the Marne. He put soldiers on the taxi cabs, and it was called the Holy Road. And the Germans were... their strategy was to capture Paris and knock France out of the war in World War One and win. But Gallieni saved Paris, and he died today in 1916. One of the great Indian statesmen and companion of Gandhi, Nehru, died today. 1987, we hear a lot about these jets, the Northrop planes. Well, the guy who was the inventor, he died today. And let's see, who else? Oh, yes, and then getting back to war, 1943, there was racial discrimination in the services and in the war industries, but a lot of blacks, you see the blacks that had come up from the South to the industrial North, Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia, San Francisco, to work in Kaiser shipyards and in the war industry, but they were discriminated against. So in 1943, the U.S. Government, the FDR administration, prohibited racial discrimination in the war industry. So it was a start toward civil rights and equality for all the races. And then in 1921, and this is very relevant to us today, this mess in Afghanistan. After 84 years, the British gave up sovereignty over Afghanistan, and they had King Daoud, I think. Anyway, go to my YouTube site and look up General Brigadier Ingalls. And the YouTube site is Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas. There is a clip from the film Battle, the Charge of Light Brigade, which they deal with Russian meddling in Afghanistan, or what was known as the Northwest Frontier. That is very accurate. It's just a clip with Errol Flynn. And then Brigadier Ingalls served in the Northwest Frontier with the Bengal Lancers, famous British regiment, also served in the Italian campaign in World War II. And he made, I interviewed him several years ago before his death, and he talks about the problems in Afghanistan. It was about a two-hour interview, but this is an excerpt. So if you're interested in that, there is a rare Japanese film on the Battle of the Tsushima Straits. For some reason, nobody else has done a film on that great battle where the Japanese fleet sank just about all the ships of the Russian Baltic fleet, which came to relieve Port Arthur. And maybe I'll put a clip up on our YouTube, because we have a rare copy of that film in our archives. Let's see, what else today? Famous birthdays. Oh, do we have the birthdays? And some controversial ones. Rachel Carson, now with this whole environmental thing and this fuss about using that dispersant to try to contain the oil. It's a little late now with BP, British Petroleum. Rachel Carson wrote her controversial book about the use of DDT. If you see some of the old War Department, as it was called, or U.S. Defense Department films that were made after the camps, and we'll put up some of the excerpts that we have on our YouTube site. Again, Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas. You will see that the survivors of the concentration camps and the displaced persons, known as DPs, were sprayed with DDT in those days. And, of course, there's a controversy about whether these people came down with cancer or other diseases or illnesses. But Rachel Carson used to be held up as an icon of the environmental movement. But now there's some questions about whether her research and her books, the material in those books, is accurate, scientifically valid. Also today, another great author, John Cheever, and he wrote Falconer. Great. He has a daughter, Susan. I think she's also a writer. He wrote about he was in the closet, but he wasn't an activist. And he wrote about these episodes in his books. Great writer, though. And then, since we are in the throes of financial corruption and mismanagement and manipulation, today was the birthday of Jay Gould, who was in the late 18th century. He was a manipulator with financial transactions in the East. I think railroads were involved. Politicians were involved. So he was born. And another great author, those of you who like Humphrey Bogart's films, The Maltese Falcon, and great San Francisco icon, is Dashiell Hammett, was born today. And then for our cowboy friends, Wild Bill Hickok. And then getting back to the movies, Vincent Price, with that great voice of his. His wife was also, I think, an actress. And then those of us who, we got Memorial Day coming up, and after the Civil War, Julia Ward Howe, who was born today, wrote the words that were used in the music called the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And it was even played at Churchill's funeral. One of his favorite hymns was played, I think, at Westminster Cathedral when he died, I think, in 1962, if I'm not mistaken. And then those of us who remember the 1968 Democratic Convention, and one of the great liberals from Minnesota was Hubert Humphrey, was born today. So had some interesting birthdays, interesting deaths, and some interesting events. Oh, also today in 1679, this is becoming this legal issue, habeas corpus. A lot of people don't know the origin of that. In English law, the British Parliament pushed that through, and habeas corpus became a protection. It wasn't in the Magna Carta, which went back to the days of King Richard I, excuse me, and his brother King John, who used to say, "Here's one for people who are slobs." He was asked why he didn't bathe, and he said, "My sweat bathes me." Yeah, I mean, pretty gross, but that's the way it is. You know, when the Normans, King Richard was the Plantagenets, they're called, invaded England with William, called William the Bastard, but his descendants, the Saxons, who were the natives of Britain at the time, taught the Normans how to bathe. The Normans weren't that clean. Of course, it's interesting that has been the accusation leveled against the French, that they don't take baths as often as the British do, or showers. Maybe they've changed, but I remember when I was in Europe in the 70s that was still, I took a bath every day because it was so hot in August when I was there. But that was the accusation levied against the French, and that's one of the reasons why it is thought that the French used to use so much perfume. But be that as it may, let's moving right along. Now, we have a growing political scandal here in San Francisco, which may affect a lot of races. Barbara Boxer is fighting for her political life, according to one of the polls. I don't know how accurate it is. Baghdad Barbara, who's from New York, and she's got that attitude, red diaper grandbaby, we call her. And now the red diaper babies, this is political lexicon. That's the name given to the children and the grandchildren of the socialist and the, in effect, communist, who came from Russia, came from Europe, also from Germany, and settled in on the Eastern Seaboard, New York and places like that, infiltrated the colleges like Columbia, infiltrated the teachers' union, and the descendants of these communists, these socialists, were called red diaper babies because of their the socialism and this communist affinity, the attraction that they seemed to that political philosophy or horror, depending on which end of the rifle butt you're at or your end. But she's from New York, and there are people wish she would go back there. It's her fourth. She's running for a fourth term. We'll see what happens here in California. She was nearly defeated the first time around by Bruce Hutchinson, but she's always had these close calls. So this may be her curtain call. We hope it is, and hope the voters use the crook of the crane to pull her off the stage. But what's happened here is the district attorney, a black woman, a black and Indian, native, not Native American, but Indian from over there, and no prior background. I don't know where this woman came from, but anyway, somehow she became the district attorney of San Francisco, and people were so glad to get rid of Terrence Hallinan, the notorious Hallinan family, a family steeped with a whole history of terrorism and treachery. We'll get into the history of that family. Quite interesting. They're not your ordinary family, and you wouldn't want to be. A lot of them are lawyers, and I don't know how that happened. They almost disbarred Terrence. But anyway, he was so bad. There were fistfights, sexual harassment, pornography, prostitution went on in his office. And, of course, the Steve Neri case, we'll get into that, and several other cases. Anyway, people were glad to get rid of him and voted for her. She was going to come in as a reformer, and she listed all the things that all the violations that he did. And so now we find out that she's as bad, if not worse, than he is, and she's running for state attorney general. And a new judge, who was a former assistant U.S. attorney here in Northern District, has castigated her for violating the rights of defendants. And, you know, it used to be that women were treated with velvet gloves. Well, no more. I mean, there's a French phrase, cherchez la femme. They are just as bad, if not worse. They've got this. Some of them had this Madame Lafarge attitude that they've got to stick it to men, and getting even for all the real and imagined insults and violations of femininity and womanhood. But anyway, she's trying to cover her butt on this, and we'll see if she becomes state attorney general, because this state has more people on death row, and she's opposed to the death penalty. I don't agree with that. Some people deserve to die like Carl Chessman, but you know, we should be fair and give these people a fair trial. But anyway, you know, she's a political hack, and we're going to see more. But keep in mind that when people who are innocent are sent to prison, the American taxpayer pays in many ways. It's not only the California taxpayer who pays for the state prison system, the salaries, and the health care, and then when they get out, the parole and probation, but the federal money that comes in from out of the whole tax pot to fund these various administration of justice programs in the courts. So it's not something that's local to California. And it's something that everybody across the nation was concerned about, the overcrowding in the prisons and people who are innocent being sent to jail so that some politician can look good and brag about his conviction rate, which was obtained through fraud. And, you know, it destroys families, it destroys young people. Well, we'll get into more of that. The other thing is people are worried about the real estate market, those people who got mortgages that they were not qualified to get to begin with, but nobody is looking at these HUD-subsidized developers. This has been going on for a long time. The Clinton administration made this deal. The public housing was started in the FDR's administration to provide needed and necessary housing for poor people and people who are new immigrants, came here illegally, and gave them a foothold in the country, a roof over their head, a floor under their feet. And when they got education, a job, they could move on and buy their own house, maybe even in Levittown, those of you who remember that. But what's happened is a lot of these housing projects were built on land that is very valuable. You look at Cabrini Green in Chicago. You look at the Billings housing projects here in San Francisco. And the Clinton administration decided to give at least 10% of the federal stock of public housing to these bogus real estate developers who turned out to be local politicians and local political hacks. And what happens is the American taxpayer pays for the site acquisition, the rehab, the maintenance, the Section 8s, and what's happened, and then these new projects, which are called Build and Abandon, which is one of them we have here named after a sexual predator, P4A Plaza. And you can go to our YouTube site, and you can see it. $10 million went into this project, named after an illegal alien, a homosexual predator in the Steven Neri case, and also a neo-Nazi from Argentina, and a racist, made racist comments about blacks, Jews, people he didn't like. But, you know, this is how screwed up things are. But anyway, what has happened is American taxpayer pays for these projects, pays for the subsidized rents, even though a lot of them are hurting or are beginning to hurt because of the stagnation of our economy. However, even though the taxpayer pays for these projects, they will never own them. The politically connected developer, such as Mission Housing here in San Francisco, and there are others, in 1993-94, after several years of meetings with the FBI here regionally and in Washington, or a different agency there, I was asked to do a flowchart. I reluctantly did it only because there was international money laundering involved with some of these developers, drugs, pornography, child prostitution. So it became a hydra-headed problem, and it's the only reason, as a media person, I did it. But media people really shouldn't get involved in these things unless there are these unusual circumstances, which this was. But anyway, you can go again to our YouTube site, Amicus Veritas, and look for the flowchart that the FBI requested. So, and I got threatened because I did this, and so I'm not backing down. But anyway, it's dated, but it shows you the tentacles of these politically connected people who don't have the interests of the poor and the homeless and people who need housing and are entitled to it because of the federal money that was there. And what they've done is hijacked these HUD programs. So you can see the flowchart. It's dated, but gives you an idea of how this thing works across the country or has worked. There are several new corporations, and I just haven't had time to do a flowchart. Now, the other thing, nobody is talking about the $9 billion program called the Community Health Care. These are the clinics that the government funded under a after World War II program called Hill Burton. It's not the John Burton's, the Burtons of California, Senator Burton from Ohio, and Senator Lister Hill from Alabama. And what they did was fund not only hospitals, which have to take a certain amount of impoverished patients, people who can't pay or have no insurance, and also they set up these community, basically HMOs. And the operators of these HMOs, some of them are connected to these nonprofits or non-taxpaying profits, they have to take anybody that comes in there. They cannot ask their legal, if they're in the country legally. They provide a lot of good basic services. They're not going to do an open heart surgery or sometimes they deliver babies, fix broken arms, take care of the flu, things like that. But basic HMOs, and $9 billion has gone into this program last year. So nobody's talking about what's going to happen to that program if Obamacare survives these court challenges that are already the briefs have been filed in some of these states. So that's a question that everybody should be asking about. And then if series of new taxes that I keep hearing about, the VAT tax and all that over nearly half of everybody's income is going to be taxed and taken away to fund these various programs, which the people who are taxed may not even benefit from. So you got to pay attention to these things. You know, ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you, and will. So don't complain after it happened. You better pay attention now and go to other websites like Drew Raines' Marine Disquisition. There's several other, the American Thinker, there's several other good websites out there. Everybody who's trying to alert people and to make them aware has got information. So, and then weigh it. And a lot of it's good, and most of it's accurate, because people can't afford to make stupid mistakes or lie, distort, and omit. Also, next week is military, or June is military month, so we'll be featuring, I've got an excerpt, General Berrigan. He was the deputy commander at Normandy, Army Corps of Engineers, and he developed the plan, one of the plans, to put the Mulberry Bridges. The British invented them, but he implemented putting them in place in Normandy. So I interviewed him. He only did one interview. He also, he was the American general in charge of the Army Corps of Engineers and the St. Lawrence Seaway Project. The American side was an American-Canadian project. So that was his last major national project that he did. And, of course, the St. Lawrence Seaway Project up there through the northern part of the United States and Canada would allow ocean-going ships to come into the Great Lakes. One of the problems of the Great Lakes, and at least in Lake Michigan, are these lamprey eels and some of these other things that have come in, and they're destroying the native aquatic life there. So those people who live in that area, in those areas, should be aware of that and try to get rid of those lamprey eels, because they prey on the native aquatic life there. And I don't know if they're harmful to humans, but pay attention, because it's your waterway. The other thing will be we have some rare military museum exhibits here, and we'll be featuring those. For a town, San Francisco used to be one of the most favored towns, little cities for the military through World War II, even through the Korean War. Not anymore, but we still have the relics of that around, that period around, and so we'll be featuring some of that and what de Gaulle liked when he came here to San Francisco. He did like San Francisco, and we have some rare military artifacts here, which I did put up, I think, initially. And let's see, what else? So you can email me at verzola@gmail.com, verzola. .com. You can also look at all of our websites. We're updating our Californians Against Voter Fraud, and go to Verzola, V-E-R-Z-O-L-A .com, C-O-M, and that'll roll you over when you Google it to all our other websites, and we'll be updating those as they come along. And since this is appropriate, we'll be ending with our ending theme.
Hey, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you $5. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen. Here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's your plan?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bet up.
Yeah, that comment about a qualified Republican to lose, that may be happening in the Pennsylvania race between Sestak and Toomey. He may be rolling over. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.